In February of 2017, I attended a performance in Detroit, Michigan of a work honoring black victims of police brutality, and it inspired me to explore the relationship between race and classical music. After engaging conversations with black classical musicians from across the country and the nation's leading hip-hop orchestra, the discussion brought me to Washington, D.C. to speak at the Kennedy Center's Shift Festival on a panel organized in part by the program manager for the Performing Arts for Everyone at the Kennedy Center, Ariel Elizabeth Shelton. I sat down with her to learn a few things, including how she entered the world of classical music.
Okay, when I was in the sixth grade, I'll start there, I was really interested in joining like one of the creative disciplines, be it, you know, drawing or music or, you know, whatever I could get a hand on, I wanted to be a part of it. And music seemed to be the one class that fit my schedule, right? So I walk into band class, and I had an amazing band teacher. I still, like, really look up to him. His name is Randy Scott. He's also a musician based in Detroit. He plays sax. Big ups to Randy Scott. And he, I think, continues to this day. He introduces beginner students to certain instruments in the classroom by having older students come in and play them. So he had instruments performed, and he selected those instruments that he needed more of, that he wanted to create a larger pipeline for. So he had students play a French horn. He would have students play the oboe. He would have students play the bassoon. And he wouldn't always have somebody play like the trumpet or, you know, trombone, because a lot of students already knew those instruments. And after the end of that presentation, he would say to the class, hey, if you play any of these instruments, you're going to get a full ride to college. So I saw the French horn. I thought it was an amazing sounding instrument. I saw a young black girl playing that instrument, and so I could see myself playing that instrument. And once he said that, you know, you could get a scholarship if you got real good at it, oh, please, I was in, right? So my first introduction to seeing the French horn and knowing what the French horn was seeing a young black girl playing it. And I've never let go of that, the importance of that representation, and also the doors that having music could open, you know, through scholarships, through, you know, just opening my mind to what was out there. Once I started to practice the horn, I started to ask for CDs from, you know, parents or whoever, and I started to realize that there was basically this whole world that I had never really acknowledged, but had always surrounded me in classical music. Like, I mean, you hear classical music all the time and it's always around you, but I never had been exposed to that until I picked up an instrument on my own and my ears, you know, started to pick that up as well.
The scholarship offer promised by Ariel's band director materialized years later, and she began her collegiate career at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Although her time as a freelancer there proved beneficial, she soon realized that playing professionally or teaching didn't quite match her career aspirations, and she began investigating why she didn't see other musicians of color taking her place in these roles.
So I began picking up and doing events like out of my own pocket. I did a musicians networking event here in the city. I brought in Bob Watt, who was like the first black horn player to make it into a major orchestra. He gave a talk at Howard, and I produced that. And I just started to produce these things on my own, and then also worked with organizations that I felt like kind of strove for those missions that I was looking for. So like Washington Women in Jazz Festival with Amy Borman, which was amazing. I worked with Washington Performing Arts with Shea Stevens in their inaugural season for like community engagement work there, which is how I ended up being connected in producing this event as well to some degree. And so on. I could go on and on and on about what I did. Add me on LinkedIn if you want to. And you can see the resume, but eventually it led me to building a strong enough network and strong enough experiences to be the program manager here at the Kennedy Center.
What do you consider some of your personal feelings concerning diversity in this field, traditionally seen as predominantly or even wholly white?
I will say one thing that I want to make sure that we're continuing to do, and it's something that I bring up, you know, in every meeting that I'm in, is to recognize that putting representation on the stage in as many nuanced and varied ways as possible is incredibly important. So we have an amazing inaugural season taking place right now for hip hop and contemporary music, and it's incredible. And I mean, I can't talk enough about how much I love and admire all the amazing work that's taking place there, with especially Simone Eccleston, who I look up to as like one of the most amazing leaders in the field right now. I will say that her doing her work is amazing and it needs to continue, but alongside that, we need to have larger conversations with the Washington National Opera, and they're doing great work too, for sure, but especially the National Symphony Orchestra, around the programming practices that are taking place. So, I mean, you know, this is something that I think I make pretty clear wherever possible, but we definitely need to ensure that we're pushing forward and including the works of as many people from as many cultural backgrounds, and especially in today's day and age, Black Americans, given the history and the cultural context in which we live around divisions and the history that America is continuously grappling with around Black Americans and their abuse in the creation of this land, and the whitewashing of the history of Black Americans in classical music. Like, we just need to make sure that that's a part of the conversation as much as the hip hop programming that's taking place, as much as, you know, having someone like Solomon on stage with the Washington National Opera. Like, you know, we just need to make sure that we're continuing that conversation. So I would say, sometimes I'm a little surprised that I'm the one that has to bring those conversations into the room, but while I'm here, I'm happy to continue to do it.
What is any person's or any institution's responsibility toward these efforts?
That's such a good question. I think we all have a lot of responsibility in knowing our history fully and discovering our history fully and not accepting the history that's taught to us and taking a critical look ourselves and independently at, you know, what is fed to us. Institutions have a responsibility to really listen closely to the community wherever possible. If community members are saying that they feel uncomfortable in an orchestral hall, we can't ignore that and then think that we're gonna work towards diverse audiences. That it's impossible to ignore someone and then cultivate a stronger relationship with them. I mean, that's just, you know, social, you know, behavior 101. So I think our responsibility is to really dismantle and re-examine some of the systems that we've been brought into and question where they come from, acknowledge where they come from, and move from there.
I want to bring our conversation full circle and go back to your time as a child horn player. You mentioned seeing another young Black girl playing the horn, and that inspired you to play the horn. Do you remember who she was?
Oh, yes, Courtney Lawler. Hey, girl.
From integrating the stage to incorporating Black art forms into classical music and even exploring diversity through arts administration, the relationship between race and classical music is one that's continuing to grow and evolve. You can listen to parts 1 and 2 of this series by visiting WUOT.org and searching Race and Classical Music. You can read transcripts of those conversations and watch the Shift Festival panel discussion by visiting artsinachangingamerica.org. The music you've heard in this feature was written and performed by members of Imani Winds. From WUOT in Knoxville, I'm Garrett McQueen.